Lucas on Life.
Hello, I'm Jeff Lucas. You're listening to Lucas on Life tonight here on Premier Christian Radio. A very warm welcome to you. And tonight, I'd like to talk about the power of a welcome. Over my decades of ministry, I've been so privileged to speak in a vast variety and number of churches. I've jigged around in worship with charismatics and Pentecostals, ate mountains of food with lovely, friendly Methodists who didn't drink alcohol but certainly loved to eat. I participated in a glory march as the brass band played with Salvation Army friends, and I've coughed reverently, I hope, with incense-swinging High Anglicans. I've loved and enjoyed so many different styles of doing church. The Christian family, at its best, can be so beautiful. In all of my travels, I've noticed, though, that whatever the style and even theological distinctive of a church, there's one consistent attitude that makes the world of difference in every situation, and that's the power of being a welcoming people. I became a Christian at the age of 17, and my life was utterly changed when, as a rather confused agnostic, I found myself wonderfully welcomed as I showed up at a local church in Barking in Essex. It was a rash, spur-of-the-moment decision to go to a church that day. Previous encounters with church in my 17 years of life hadn't been that impressive. As a child, I attended Sunday school three times. I felt confused because those were the days of fuzzy felt, where paper cutouts of biblical characters were plastered on a felt board, which apparently just wasn't fuzzy enough because Moses kept falling off. This led me to the mistaken impression that Moses was a skydiver, which he was not. I'd also attended a rather formal church where the organist sat perched high up in a loft at the front of the building. So we watched his back throughout the sermon, and sometimes he would start leaning hard to the left, indicating that he was succumbing to slumber as the preacher droned on. My prayers back then were focused around the uncharitable hope that, like fuzzy felt Moses, the organist might fall headlong out of the organ loft, which was very rude of me. My interest in the gospel was not ignited. What grabbed my attention was a life beautifully lived, and then an amazing welcome. My RE teacher at school, Mrs. Richardson, she was constantly on the move, balancing her career with the demands that came because she was also married to a pastor. She constantly bustled around from classroom to classroom, often picking up extra work because other teachers felt able to offload responsibilities on her because she was a Christian. Being kind and gracious to me was also a constant in her life. I was not the most diligent or attentive student and gave her many opportunities for frustration. But when she spoke about her Jesus and when she spoke to me, she exuded warmth and grace. And so when I finally decided to visit a church, it was her church that I turned to. I remember my heart was beating wildly against my chest as I stepped into a crude tin-roofed building. I stepped suddenly into a strange alien world. A song leader with wild windmill arms wrestled with a smile that threatened to possess his whole face. The congregation had eyes that were moist, and some of them had their arms raised up in the air in worship. Hands up in the air, who were they waving at? Were they asking permission to slip out to the bathroom? One hand if you need to go a little, two hands if you need to go, right now? I was succumbing to confusion, but it was to get worse, because abruptly the song ended, everyone sat down, and it was then that I saw the miniature swimming pool at the front of the building. The minister appeared resplendent in a long black gown with fishing waders up to his thighs, an aquatic Dracula. Now another man joined him in the water, and suddenly the Reverend Dracula grabbed the hapless guy and pushed him under the water. He'd been baptized, and I'd had enough. I fidgeted through the sermon, made a mental note of how many people were desperate for the loo during the final song, and then made a run for it. Sitting outside in my car, I decided Christians were crazy and I would have nothing to do with them ever again. Then I realized I'd left my coat in the church building, so I crept back inside and was immediately confronted by the youth leader. I have never seen so many teeth in a human head in my whole life. He smilingly, welcomingly invited me to the afterglow. Now, what was the afterglow? Did this crowd end their day by setting fire to the elderly? I walked in and joined these afterglowers. Dracula's baptismal victim approached me. Still slightly damp, he shook my hand and got straight to the point. "Hello, are you a Christian?" I mumbled something pathetic and suddenly realized that I was not a Christian. I didn't know God and I really wanted to. These people had confused me, irritated me, but I had to know the reason behind their smiles. I told my still dripping friend that I wanted to take the big step. And so I did. And then after I'd made that decision to follow Jesus, with undisguised delight, everybody that had stayed for the afterglow formed a long queue to the back of the building, and I slowly went down that line of love, hugged and affirmed. I had found the church. They were a million miles from my culture in just about everything they said and did, but they loved God, they loved one another, and mysteriously, it seemed like they were reaching out to me with love. I was home. There was one further blessing. One of the people who stood in that line, that queue, was Kay, who became my wife. Integrity demands that I share that she initially had her eye on my friend who came with me that night, but I'm over that now. Since that evening, there have been seasons of delight and tears, obvious answers to prayer, and bewildering times of seeming silence from heaven. But I'll be forever grateful, literally, for that merry band of Jesus people who told me that Jesus welcomed me and then welcomed and embraced me immediately to be part of their family. It was a good day. My life was transformed by a welcoming God and His welcoming people. We're thinking about welcome, the power of making people feel at home when they decide to come among us as Christians and visit our churches. I won't name it in case you live there and put a contract on my life as a result of hearing this. It's enough to say that the village, well, it's somewhere in Dorset. It's got a picture postcard high street flanked with Victorian street lamps and beautiful Purbeck stone cottages. It really makes it the stuff of chocolate box lids. Our family were there for a month in a rented cottage, a cosy 300-year-old nest where we would celebrate Christmas and I would finish writing a book. Bliss. Maybe. Our first step out was to the pub, a helpful 20 yards from our cottage. Reassuringly old, it looked loaded with character and charm, but there was something of an icebox within. I pushed on the great ironclad door, my heart tinged with the vague, irrational anxiety that I sometimes feel when I enter somewhere unfamiliar. I was hoping for a welcome, but I was to be disappointed, and my angst was justified. Suddenly, I felt the trauma of not belonging. The bar area was small, one of a series of very tiny rooms, and locals lined the walls, filling every seat, chattering happily back and forth, the ping-pong of life and conversation in a small village. Everyone seemed to know everyone. We, of course, knew nobody. We sauntered hopefully in, all smiles and nods of greeting, and immediately everything went very quiet. The happy conversational buzz suddenly silenced, the chilly quiet, quite deafening. Suddenly the bar area where we stood, blocking their view of each other and effectively preventing any further chat until we would just get out of the way, well, it turned into a stage with us the unwelcome fools stranded upon it. I stammered my order, conscious as I was of a hushed audience, their eyes boring holes in my back, or at least it felt that way. A stammered attempt to the warm comment to the lady behind the bar was rejected with a sniff, so we fled with our drinks to the stark, empty little room next door. Tourists, it seemed, were apparently on the same level in the food chain as rodents. We sipped our drinks and organized an impromptu escape committee. We are mad idiots, and so undeterred, we ventured back to the desolate pub the next night. The same lady behind the bar refused to give us the barest hint of recognition that she'd ever clapped eyes on us before. Our good evening was greeted with a yes. Never mind the pleasantries, just get on with your order. One of us, in a rash gesture, decided to offer a compliment to her. This is a very nice pub, he chortled. She looked up slowly from her pouring, eyes narrowed, and volleyed back our warm comment like an unwanted hand grenade. Well, we're not going to change it, she said. Change it? Who implied that any amendments or revisions were needed? This was a nice pub. I said N-I-C-E, nice. Hello? Utterly defeated, we retreated again to the draughty little room of the night before. All right, let's be charitable. Perhaps these local folk get utterly fed up with smartphone-toting, noisy tourists messing up their summers, and they needed to have their winter as a needed breather, a holiday from holidaymakers. We decided to visit the church for their midnight Christmas service. We needed to sit down, and three seats were close and very vacant, and our bottoms were just about to fill them when a smartly dressed man seated in the row behind the empty seats leaned forward, waving his hands, a look of horror in his eyes. And then I realized with shame that we were taking seats reserved for the stewards who would collect the offering, and so I muttered a flustered apology to the flapping seat sentry and herded the three of us off to some safer wooden chairs at the side of the nave. Flushed with shame, I tried to settle my skipping heart down and just focus on the worship, and before long I felt glad that we'd braved the seat awkwardness. The service itself was rich and the liturgy heartfelt. These people certainly sang their hearts out, and all was going swimmingly well until the sermon. The minister came quite close to actually recognizing that he was talking to real-life human beings rather than delivering a scripted homily to the ancient rafters. But really, not close enough, and I shifted uncomfortably in my seat, trying not to be critical, but frustrated by the millions of miles that there seemed to be between priest and people, angry at the fact that this could mean a perception that there were light years between them and God. We hurried out at the end of the service. But all was not lost in our village holiday, because the village grocer come post office turned out to be a haven of delights. Not only because of its fresh, crusty rolls and crisp newspapers that looked freshly ironed and starched, the owner was anything but stiff. He greeted us like old friends and chatted with us happily about village life. One morning, his shop was loaded with people fussing around the heaving shelves and tiny aisles. I asked him about a coastal walk. The whole store chimed in, a chorus of help and kindness and yes, welcome. There was not a hint of raised eyebrows and not more stupid tourists attitude from them, just laughter, directions, and a lovely chat. I closed the door behind me, a little ding of its attached bell, a vague connection to yesteryear, and then, needing to buy absolutely nothing more at all, I suddenly wanted to go back inside again and rejoin the party. The grocer, who is also a postmaster, must be very busy. He's created a culture of welcome. I wonder if he could possibly take on running a pub, maybe even a church as well. As we've been thinking about the power of welcome, I can remember the day when a man called Ken showed up at our church. He caused quite a stir. Some of our congregation, concerned about their safety, called upon the Lord with a whispered prayer for protection. Others, preferring more temporal security, were possibly thinking about calling the police. Now, we like to be welcoming, and we don't normally treat visitors to our church with such suspicion. But Ken, he really was a portrait of menace. Dressed totally in black, his arms and face covered in crude, self-inflicted tattoos, his studded trench coat made him look like a goth vampire. And some of our congregation weren't that keen on giving blood. His rage was further confirmed by his tattooed knuckles. There was a swear word on his left hand. It made it really clear that his life message was one of anger. He was a drug abuser who'd spent more than half of his life in jail. He was infamous in our community, his face permanently twisted into a snarl. He only came to the service at our church because someone dared him to attend. "You're so horrible," they said. "You should try going to a church." Hardly a warm evangelistic strategy, but it worked. Ken sat at the back, absolutely determined to be unmoved, and later confessed that in living memory, he'd never, ever cried. But then, little Marge Sample showed up. Silver-haired, elderly, and with a smile that could light up a room, little Marge was on duty as a member of our welcome team that morning. She boldly strolled over to where Ken was sitting, his arms folded defiantly. "Hello," she chirped. "I'm Marge. I don't believe we've met." She rested her hand lightly on his studded shoulder. Marge was somewhat taken aback by Ken's immediate, violent response. Burying his face in his hands, he suddenly exploded into loud sobbing. This was no penitent whimper. He howled. Heads turned nervously. Ken sobbed his way into the kingdom of God that day, becoming a Christian. The emotional dam burst was triggered quite simply because nobody had been warm and welcoming to him for a very, very long time. A simple gesture of kindness unlocked a man who'd been imprisoned by hate for decades. Ken started to attend church, and his enthusiasm in worship initially caused a few raised eyebrows. When he raised his hands in praise, people three rows back got a rather unexpected message from those swear word embossed knuckles. Eventually, he decided to have those tattoos removed by laser surgery. A doctor in the church volunteered his time, and we took an offering to cover other hospitalization costs. The amount that was needed was the exact final total of the offering, another small miracle. Standing in the baptismal tank with his hands still encased in post-operative plastic bags, he thanked the congregation. His face beaming, he held up those hands. "Now the outside matches the inside," he said. "I'm clean." Ken's life was totally transformed, and his conversion stuck. Sometimes it doesn't take a lot to change everything. Ken's life, my life, we were both changed by the power of a great welcome. See you next time.
Lucas on Life.